particularly love the phrases of the Avinu Malkeinu, our Father, our King. They seem to me to be basic, human, shared. And its chant is full of familiar associations which carry me back to the generations, for their needs and ours are one, and their prayers and ours are one. Our Father, our King, hear our prayer. Have mercy upon us and upon our children. Keep far pestilence, war, and famine. Cause all hatred to disappear from our earth. Inscribe us for blessing in the book of life. Grant unto us a year of happiness. This year, as I reviewed our liturgy in preparation for tonight, I found that my voice took on a particular edge as I reread and rehearsed these familiar phrases. I'd always read them with patient confidence. I sensed now that I was reading them with a sense of urgency, as if I was not quite sure how desperately I really felt the need of God's protective care. I wonder if you did not share this sense of chill, the sense of foreboding, which surprised me, but which I think I felt increasingly throughout the year. The last year, 5,730, was not a good year. It was a year full of dark headlines about Vietnam and Cambodia, about the Suez and about the Jordan. There was a sense during the year that civilization as we knew it was becoming unstuck. There was near anarchy in some of our cities. Familiar places, schools, places of business were being threatened and bombed. There were few redeeming victories which gave elation and joy. Last year was the year we couldn't get back to the moon. Last year was the year when we sat for 12 months at a peace table and made no peace. Throughout the year, a heavy smog hung over our cities, darkening the sunshine, bespeaking the pall which seemed to hold over our lives, saying to us, "You're choking in your own dirt. Your civilization is being smothered by your own actions." Now, I tried to be honest with myself. Was I really feeling a downturn in the path of progress, a loss of hope in the possibility of a better tomorrow, of our working out our problems? Or was this only the whining of a spoiled child who had suddenly been told he must come in from his play, that there are chores to do and tasks to be undertaken? The last two decades have been decades of abundance for America. There have been problems, but they've been out there. Nations have withered, but they've been in other continents. And largely, the most desperate acts of men have been taken and carried out far from our shores. Was I simply full of self-pity because I was suddenly learning that America was no different? That the convulsions of our world shook the soil on which I stood? That I was being forced to acknowledge my common frailty with other men? Certainly I heard whining and self-pity among my neighbors in the voices which filled the public press. Men and women who wondered why our government could simply not shake its fist and make the world dance to its tune. People who complained that we were being weak and pusillanimous because we didn't sweep the streets of our cities from those who dissented when we said, "Give us back the good old days, things as they once were, the old-time securities," men and women and young men and young women particularly who said, "Now wait a minute, good old days, good for those with special privilege, good for those with white faces, but the good old days were unjust days, inadequate days, brutal days, for the minorities, for the oppressed, for those outside the pale of American abundance. I try to be honest with myself. Was I alone in feeling this sense of burden? I think not, but I'm not sure. Perhaps you sensed it with me. Certainly, I heard many of you sigh. Certainly, I heard some of you say, as you picked up the news or as we listened to the radio, what now? What next? We seem to have run out of gas. There's one tragedy upon another. Is there no relief, no surcease? I tried to be honest with myself. I know that during the year I had that sense that I was being caught up in the outer fringe of a whirlwind, drawn more and more towards its vortex. That there were little incidents, niggling incidents perhaps, but each one offered a counterpoint to the headlines. My classes at university were suddenly canceled when the Kent State incident blew up in our faces. And this fall I had to be photographed, mugged, in order to be given a pass to enter a classroom to teach Judaism. The walls of this building were suddenly stenciled last year with the clenched fists of revolution. A good friend, a good neighbor, a minister colleague with whom we share services on Thanksgiving had his life threatened and that of his family. Walking from the stadium one night after a sports event, I heard a white policeman taunt a black pedestrian and almost precipitate a race riot. Little things all, certainly. But I heard you tell me of sometimes a physical injury. I heard from your voices similar incidents, and I suspect that you too had a chronicle of little incidents which bespoke to you as these seemed to speak to me of the growing convulsion of our society, of its growing insecurity. But was this all that was behind the emotional edge of my prayer? Was it simply this whining, this sense of self-pity that suddenly I too had to face the storm? Someone said to me during the year, you know, this is the time when all Americans are becoming Jews. By that he meant, of course, that this was the time when all Americans were learning to live as Jews have always known that they must live, with insecurity as part of the normal pattern of existence, knowing that the Messiah is delayed, that for all our technical proficiency, we cannot find solutions to all human problems, that there are hopes which are deferred and hopes which are delayed and hopes which may never come true, that we live and must live with the vagaries of human existence, that there is no way out. But you know, as I tried to analyze my soul, I know deep down that though I was saddened to recognize that insecurity had come to this land, I was not surprised. As a Jew, I knew that it was as logical for terrorists to be on the streets of Manhattan as on the streets of Jerusalem. That there was no logic which said that a city hall in Shaker Heights could not be bombed if city halls were being bombed elsewhere in the world. I was saddened, but I was not shocked. As I tried to analyze that emotional thrust which suddenly welled up as I reread the Avinu Malkeinu, I think I know that it came out of my concern for Israel. We have, each of us, a tremendous emotional, spiritual investment in that little state. It represents the best of our people's creative energies, the best of our human spirit, the best of our courage. And during this year, we watched as literally one half of the world leaned upon that little state, went into league to erase it and to efface it from off the face of the earth. Now I know that part of my concern was born of concern for Israel, part for the reality which is Israel, the people who are there, our friends, our comrades in faith. But part of it too was my feeling that Israel somehow represents a symbol of that which is constructive, with that which is wholesome in our civilization. And that the threat that hung over Israel was not only a threat to Jews, to our state, but to all of civilization, to all of decency. For what came through the news to me this year was simply that it was all those who are in league against human rights, against human decency, against those who respect reason and those who respect freedom, that all these had suddenly entered into league. I wonder why all the fuss. There are 2.5 million Israelis. Why does it require half the world to enter into league against them? What do these 2.5 million represent in the eyes of half the world? Why must there be this vast armada of force arrayed against them? I ask myself, what difference can another few thousand square miles of marginal land mean to half the world? Why can't they simply tolerate that society which our people has built? I ask myself, how is it that the fight against Israel has somehow become an unholy crusade? And I'm not satisfied simply with the answer that for a generation now, the Arab masses have been whipped up into a frenzy by demagoguery, by propaganda, by being told only one truth, what their leaders want them to say. For I sense the same edge of passion in the Soviet. And what I find written in the Middle East is that this is a Russian war quite as much as it is an Arab war. And the Russians are entering that war with the same emotional thrust as are the Arabs. Read their venomous propaganda. It's not enough to say Russia wants open water ports, Russia wants commercial advantage in the Middle East and oil. That's only part of the explanation. It doesn't explain the unremitting barrage of anti-Jewish, anti-Israel, anti-Semitic propaganda which has spewed forth from Russian centers now for a generation. Why Israel? Why this attack on a little people? Why lean so hard, O world? What are we to you? A minority of a minority? A fraction of 1% of the population of the world? How can we be worth all this attention? The answer that I'm more and more convinced of is simply this. That Israel represents this. Faith in a God of freedom. Faith in a God who proclaimed justice. The faith of a people who have been reasonable in their demands of this world, who have sought to be constructive, civilized, who have never allowed themselves to be beguiled by those who promised the glories of paradise tomorrow, but today obey the state, obey my dictates, do what I tell you to do, tomorrow I'll give you all the goodies. Zionist ideology, which Russia so often condemns, can certainly not damage the Communist Manifesto. What is it that Russia finds so difficult to stomach in Israel? That Israel is a socialist state, a whole, sane, healthy society, and that it has become a socialist state without all the apparatus of party, without all the demands of orthodoxy and conformity, without the doctrine that you must now serve the state so that at some future time the state will serve you. Because some mujik, some satellite peasant or worker will read the lesson of Israel and know that between Israel's social rehabilitation and the sloganeering of his state leaders, the real accomplishment is the accomplishment of the pioneer, of those who build the hospitals and the roads, those who irrigate, those who make the land green, those who make the civilization gentle and the cities gracious. And what is Israel to the Arab world? They have more land than they know how to cultivate. They have too few people for the land that they have. They don't need this little land. What is Israel to the Arab world? A reproach. A reproach to all those leaders who over the last decades have said, we will take because we will not do the dirty, hard work of building. We will take our people's ignorance and illiteracy and we will allow them to vent their anger against some other state while we take from that state what we can. There is civilization, and there is the counterfeit of civilization. There are those who build, and there are those who destroy. And those who build and those who are civilized, those who accept this teaching, are a standing, living reproach. And that is why they must be destroyed. That is why the emotional energy which is levied against them. And having come to this awareness of the center of my concern, I've come, of course, to a commitment of action. But this is not the night to detail that commitment. This is the night rather to ask, if half the world leans in Israel and is in league against Israel, if they misprize all the decencies we stand for, how can we carry on? How can we stand up, the few against the many, the minority against so many? Where can we find courage, confidence? I found it in prayer. For if I spoke these words with anxiety, I spoke them with a confident faith in God. The God who first revealed himself in history as a deliverer, as the God who redeems, who out of bondage brought the Jews to freedom, out of the darkness to the light. The God who men have cried to in despair and who has answered them with great enlargement. That is my faith. But I find it a difficult faith to communicate. There are so many today who say these are but words, these are empty promises of the past. Where is your proof? Look at these graphs. Look at the economic imbalance between the little state of Israel and the world. Look at the population statistics. Look at the economic statistics. Where is there any reason to have hope? What then is my proof? Faith does not permit me proof, but I offer as proof, and proof I believe it to be, our survival, the fact we are here. If all there is to the world is naked power politics, a judgment of firepower, a judgment of numbers, by all rights we ought long since to have ceased to be. We are few, we have always been few. The days are long, the nights are black, the days have always been long, and there have been many black nights, and there have been many Hamans, and there have been many Hitlers. And yet here we are. And where are the great empires that conspired against us? How are we here? Why are we here? Is it perhaps that there is some sustaining power in the universe? Dare I say that the guardian of Israel neither slumbers nor sleeps? But why do so many have such difficulty understanding this, accepting the mystery, the miracle of our survival as proof of this sustaining power? Because all of us are far too contemporary. Because all of us are children of an age which insists that the only time which is critical is this moment, this hour, this time. That history begins today. What do we tell our children? Don't bother studying history, it's irrelevant. The past is not prologue, it's archaic. We begin now, break the bonds, break the habits of the past, think ahead. This is a new era, there are no yesterdays. And what happens when we and our children think in these patterns? All that we can judge from is the little box of our own experience. And when we live as we are living now in a period of convulsion, a period of violence, a period of radical change, all we can see is the convulsion and the violence. All we can know is the uncertainty, and our judgments are despairing, and they are bleak, and they are black. We forget the long alternations of the tides of history. We forget that there is a time to be born and a time to die, a time to laugh and a time to cry, a time to grieve and a time to leave off grieving. The sense of time and the Jewish sense are one. The Bible includes the first extensive human history ever written. Read the Bible. And again you come upon this sense that that there is a long sweep of time. And the past is not indifferent, not unnecessary, not to be forgotten, but But it is to be searched out, for in the past you will find the handiwork of God, the slow ascent of man. We are no longer of the cave. We are no longer primates. We are no longer primitives. There is civilization. Now, there is no jejune optimism in our sense of history. We do not say that there is a steady, unremitting ascent. What we do say, that there is darkness and there is the light. There may be darkness again, but there will be light in another tomorrow. And we say as we scan the past, here I am. I'm alive. And there, the Caesars and the Hamans, they're dead. How am I? Why am I? Numbers, power, force, military skill, those have never explained our survival, nor the force that we play in the world today. We've had a role to play, and somehow decency has been sustained. Somehow God's purpose has been retained and made manifest. Oh, would we tonight recapture the sense of time? We might, and if we do, recapture some of our own dignity. For children who are existential in their thought, who think only of the moment, children of this convulsed age, how do we picture man? As a naked ape. We see only his lust, only his mania, only his greed, only his vulgarity, only his violence. I give you our art. I give you our theater. I give you our writing. And then I give you our past. Our fathers and their wisdom. Our mothers and their love, our grandparents and their sacrificial courage, all those of the decent, all those the saintly, all those the sympathetic, all those the good, we ourselves. Are we mirrored in these books and these novels and this theater which has such contempt for the human being? Yes, there are human beasts, but yes, there are human beings. Take the long view. Take the Jewish view. You'll find them. You'll see them. You know them. You are one. Oh, could we recapture this sense of time, this Jewish sense? For if we could, we would recapture our own dignity. And having recaptured it, we could do so much more. We would not be tied up in ourselves, wondering always about our emotions, but doing, caring, living. If we were to recapture that sense of time, we could recapture the faith which sustains. For next year and the years to come are going to be difficult years, burdensome years, demanding years, and only the strong will not be broken by them. Turn to God this night and offer to God the simple prayer of our fathers. We have turned to God this night and we have offered to God the simple prayer of our fathers, but for some they were words. For others they bespeak a living faith. Be willing to accept the mystery which we represent. Be willing to accept the miracle of our survival. We will survive. Israel will survive. Of that I am confident. But let us survive with joy and with strength and with courage. Let us survive with a sense of our own decency. Let us recapture the sense of time and not be broken, not be despairing, not be shattered by the events of today. Yes, they are dark days and they are shadow days, but sometimes the darkness is deepest before the dawn. Sometimes the dawn comes most unexpectedly. Who would have believed that this discouraging year would end not with Israel in disarray, but with the Arab world in disarray? And what is true on this national scale is true also of our personal lives. The sense of time, how important it is to know in the depths of grief that we can yet love, to know in moments of bitterness that there can be reconciliation, to know in moments of anger that there can be forgiveness, to know in moments of despair that there can be a new beginning. sense of time. This is the holiday which bespeaks time, time past and time yet to be. The long corridors of time have been hard for our people, but we are, and we will be. We have suffered much, but still we represent one of the great leavening and creative forces in the world. Our strength is bespoken and numbered by our own enemies. We are worthy of their hate. We stand athwart all their narrow ambitions. Avinu Malkeinu, our Father, our King, hear our prayer. Be gracious unto us and unto our children. Keep far pestilence, war, and famine. Inscribe us for blessing in the book of life. Amen.